This is Deanna Spingola. It is Tuesday, January 29th, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Wallace Thornhill. He is the co-author with David Talbot of The Electric Universe. And he also authored, along with Professor Donald E. Scott, The Electric Sky. Together, these works provide the first general introduction to a new understanding of electric currents and magnetic fields in space. His websites are thunderbolts.info, and there's several other websites, holoscience.com, which you also are featured on, and The Electric Sky. I don't think that's yours, is it?
No, that's Don Scott's.
Okay. All righty. Anyway, I have all of those up. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna.
I am a total neophyte when it comes to astronomy. I did take a class in college. I barely made it through. It started with probably 45 people in it, and it ended with less than half that.
Mm-hmm. That and seems fairly typical at university.
Yes. And it was overwhelming. I did make it through. I didn't. I only got a B, which mm-hmm. I was amazed that I got that. But it's been some years ago. And I understand that our bodies have electric currents, and I have had guests on the program talking about this kind of thing, about when that voltage gets short circuited, then we can become very sick, and we can also become very sick from the electro pollution that's in our environment and mm-hmm. within our very homes.
Yes, that seems to be the case.
So, you do have an essential guide to the electric universe on the website. It was written by a couple of gentlemen, and that mm-hmm. would probably be a good start for people who are interested in this, and we should all be interested in it. And it was written by Bob and Jim Johnson. And you recently had a conference out in, was that New Mexico?
Yes, that's right, at Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay, and you live in Australia.
Yes, that's right. I have to do a lot of traveling for these meetings.
Sure.
The next one will be the Natural Philosophy Alliance at the University of Maryland in July. But we are now having our own annual conferences, and they began last year in January. And we had this second one in January in Albuquerque. And the impression seems to be that things are going from strength to strength, which I'm very pleased to report.
Right. Now, give us a little bit of your background. How did you become involved in this, in creating the book? Because it's relatively new. I mean, it just in the 21st century is when you did this. The book came out when? In
2002, I think it was.
Okay.
But the work that led up to that extended for decades before. I suppose as a kid, I was always interested in astronomy and electronics and all this kind of stuff, and was largely self-taught when I was at high school. But when I was at high school, I also was handed a book by my father, who thought I might be interested, which more or less changed my whole view about science. And that was the book by Emanuel Velikovsky called Worlds in Collision. And that book allowed me to think about the possibility that all of the stories about the history of the Earth and of mankind were merely another form of fairy story. You know, once upon a time, long, long ago, and far, far away, all of these things happened, but it's sheer conjecture.
Right.
And Velikovsky pointed out that no, the ancients seem to have lived through some terrifying times and were facing what they thought was doomsday, the end of the world. And that the stories that were handed down to us about planetary gods hurling thunderbolts in the sky and so on was merely dismissed. Of course, in the standard view of things, the Once Upon a Time story, as being sort of poetic and imaginative, but having no real basis. But Velikovsky showed me that you could actually do what detectives do, and that is take a forensic approach to this information from a whole lot of unreliable witnesses and come up with a story that made sense in terms of modern science, with the exception that Velikovsky realized that this hurling of thunderbolts between planets and so on meant that there was an electrical or electromagnetic dimension to the solar system, which is never talked about or has never been considered by astronomers. And that,
Yeah, go
it's
ahead.
just a very strange thing when you think about it, that here's the strongest force we know. We use electricity in our homes for heating, lighting, electric motors, all sorts of things. And yet, the astronomers and cosmologists have totally ignored it in the story of the universe and of Earth history.
Exactly. And yet, and of course, we're all familiar with Benjamin Franklin going out with the key in the storm and having electricity, seeing it, understand, well, and yet we use this all the time. And I believe that it is free, that the energy out there is free, and that there is a group of people who have harnessed this and are charging the rest of us for its use when it should be free.
Yes, well, it turns out that the electric force is the thing that governs everything in the
Right.
universe. And it's as simple as that. In fact, one of the problems that students face at school and at high school now is that things have been complicated beyond recognition. And it's always been my view that nature doesn't do things the hard way. It always does things the most economical and easiest way. And so, with that view in mind, and also with this heretical view that maybe the science we were being taught was lacking, when I was at university, I was a total skeptic at university, and that is a good place to be if you want to make breakthroughs or make new discoveries. Don't believe everything you're told. Check it out for yourself. And that's what I did.
And of course, we used to believe that gravity was the strongest force in the universe, and as you say, we've kind of ignored this the electric magnetic fields, and we're just becoming aware of these things and the radio signals and all the rest. And yet we've been using these forces, listening to the radio and that kind of thing.
We think we're so clever. The
Right.
point is that when you understand that the electric force is the thing that drives everything, including life, when you start introducing electrical signals, which is what radio and television and radar and all the other things are, and cell phones, you are interfering to some extent with the message system of life itself. And of course, initially, the engineers who were asked to say whether cell phones are safe or not merely looked at the amount of power they were putting out and said, no, that's not going to cook your brain. But the thing is that it's not about cooking your brain, it's about interfering with the signaling within cells and so on. And that's the thing that is very difficult to measure, and therefore it's not the sort of thing that scientists like attempting to measure and making statements about. So there's been a lot of messing about, if you like, in the scientific literature, with one side just looking at this mechanical view of the body, and the other one looking at the more subtle energy levels in the body.
Right. And of course, all these things that we like to have, as you say, are interfering with us. And for myself, I've removed a lot of those things. I don't have cordless phones in my home, and I don't use a cell phone very rarely. And I try to not have a lot of, well, anything electric in the bedroom. I mean, even an electric blanket, I think, is very dangerous for.
Yeah, well, that's true. And in fact, at their meeting, their first meeting, which was in Las Vegas last the January before this, there was a session on earthing, which you may have heard about, and that is the idea that you use techniques to ground yourself, tie yourself to earth potential, which is how we were originally. We originally developed in contact with the earth, and of course, in recent times, we insulate ourselves from the earth by our footwear, by the fact that we live in high-rise houses, all of this kind of thing. So, it does seem that simply providing the electrons, which are free in the earth, to your body by contact with the earth, either through the various means that are available on you can buy online a sheet for your bed, for instance, which earths you when you're asleep, which is a very valuable thing to do, I think.
Oh,
These
really?
kind these kinds of things, I think, will turn out to be quite important. At present, of course, our science is still based on this mechanical view and purely chemical view of life, which doesn't understand the electrical part of life to any great degree. And this is one of the things which came out in the recent meeting in Albuquerque, because we had some really top speakers join us. There was Professor Jerry Pollack from the University of Washington, and he is probably the world's expert on the electrical nature of water. And of course, the importance of that electrical nature of water in biology. So he spoke, one of the featured speakers. We also had Rupert Sheldrake, the biologist from England, and Mei Wan Ho. These names may ring a bell for those people who are interested in the connection of living things, the interconnection of living things.
Now you mentioned water, and of course, when you put water into a microwave, you really mess it up, and
That's
it's
true.
you kill it. Well, you kill your food when you use those things also.
Yes. It was funny when I was at the conference, I was sitting in the front row, and on the second day, a young lady tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Here, don't drink the water you've got in your cup there. Have this." And it was Kangen water, which I don't know whether you've heard of it, which is an alkalized and it's a modified water, which is structured in a way which is available to your body with the least effort. Anyway, I drank that for the rest of the conference, and it was excellent. But this is the kind of thing which, at present, as I say, is not even considered when students are taught medicine, biology, and so on, but which the electric universe is trying to show people is very important. We have to understand the subtle connection between all matter. And that subtle connection is electrical, and it's not in the form of electromagnetic radiation, so you won't pick it up on the usual detectors that scientists use. It requires a different means of detection and something which is for the future, I think.
Okay. Now you mentioned the bed sheet that you could use. Excuse
Yes.
me. Where might that be available, and what does it do?
I think if you look up earthing, do a
Okay.
Google search on earthing, you will find various websites and so on. I don't have that information right in front of me,
Okay.
but certainly there is plenty of information available. And there's
Sure.
various means of earthing. For instance, when I'm working at my computer, I have, instead of a mouse pad, I've got an earthing pad, and just resting my hand on that while I'm typing is enough to earth me. While I'm working, so it's as simple as that.
Okay. Well, I wear a lot of gadgets every day. I have a couple of things around my neck that supposedly reflect any kind of electromagnetic rays, and I don't know whether they work or whether I've just spent a lot of money for some gadgets.
Yeah, this is the problem. The big laboratories are not prepared to spend time or effort in examining whether these things work or not. They just consider it fringe activities and turn their noses up. I think, but there are lots of things, particularly homeopathy. That's one which the medical profession tends to dismiss because scientifically it can't work. But you've got to be very careful of scientists who tell you things can't work, because as one wag said, these people shouldn't stop others who are doing
Oh,
it.
absolutely. But of course,
So
they want a monopoly on what they're doing, on their chemicals and all that kind of thing. And that, I think that's the way it's always been, where you get a popular idea and nobody really wants to go away from that idea because it's comfortable and it puts everybody in their in a comfort zone. And yet you have to stretch in order to learn anything different or to accept anything different when you hear it.
I think the education system actually fails students,
Oh, terribly.
because they are given so-called facts, but they're not taught the history of those facts. How did we come to these facts? And when you look at the history, most of the facts were derived by a show of hands. Now, science doesn't rely on a democratic process to decide what's true and what's not true. It has to always be open to question. So students, in fact, are best taught by posing so-called facts as questions, and let them see if they can find an alternative. And you'd be surprised sometimes at the alternatives they can come up with. But the very fact that they've thought about it means they'll never forget it. Whereas facts are the sorts of things you remember for the exams, and then you've forgotten shortly afterwards.
How true. How true. Well, how does religion fit in with the electric universe?
Well, we have nothing to say about religion except that the earliest recollections of mankind sometimes are reflected in religious texts and myths and legends. And it is possible, as I said, using this forensic technique that Velikovsky demonstrated, to fix on those things which they couldn't have invented, because the evidence is such that it tends to suggest that what they are saying actually happened. One of those, for instance, was Velikovsky's story, the biblical story about Joshua asking the sun to stand still in the sky. And if you go to the other side of the world, there are legends there of an extended night when the stars fell from the sky and the forests all burned up. Now, of course, with two disconnected races like that, if the story merely was told and passed around, the world somehow, then everyone would tell the same story about the sun standing still. But here you have people on opposite sides of the earth experiencing what we know from modern science is what you would expect. If there was a disturbance of the sun's motion in the sky on one side, then they would have an extended day, the other side would have an extended night. So that's kind of an example. But there are many others. But it seems that mankind has always been very good at telling stories. And when we don't understand something, we make up stories to cover our ignorance. And we still do it. The Big Bang is an example where we've made up a story to cover our ignorance, but it's merely another form of the religious stories. In the beginning, there was a miracle, and everything was created. And since then, it's been either clockwork or it's been winding down. So, we don't have anything specific to say about religion, because in fact, when you understand that we are a part of a universe that's connected in real time, then you begin to see the kind of a spiritual aspect to our existence. And it also gives you a bigger picture of our existence, and maybe a more far more hopeful one than one of being having some judgment day, and then the world being destroyed and all this kind of stuff. This is all looking over our shoulder at the past.
Right.
And that past is unlikely to be repeated. So instead of looking at the past, which tends to get in your way when you're trying to reach the future, we have to understand it for what it is, learn from it, and move on.
Right. And you do have at the website, Apocalypse, the End of the World, the Anxiety, Doomsday, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And
the imagery is amazing, because when you understand what the ancient stick figure rock art was all about, and the Australian Aborigines and their lightning brothers and the rainbow serpent in the sky that changed the face of the earth, all of these stories suddenly make sense. And one of the good things about that is that you suddenly give credit to these people whom we regard as primitives, that they actually, their stories in some cases are better told than ours.
Right. Well, I understand that Abraham knew quite a lot about the stars, and that he was quite a bit further along than we would have thought, given the time period that he supposedly lived in. And I know that there are other civilizations. We think we've arrived here, and that we're the first people who have discovered the things that are currently available to us, when I believe that there have been many, many other cultures and peoples, like the Mayan Indians, who were just way, way ahead of the Europeans when the Europeans came and so-called discovered them. That they were quite impressed, and then proceeded, of course, to destroy that culture.
Yes. Our arrogance is amazing.
Right.
And unfortunately, it still continues. One of the other things that I think that students of science need to be taught is human nature and the strange behavior that we exhibit. And scientists are just human beings, and they exhibit the same strange behavior. But if you understand it, I think you are much better equipped to notice when you are doing something which is inimical to advancement, and can actually change it. It's like counting up to 10 before you say something you shouldn't.
Right.
And unfortunately, modern science is rather unconstrained. Most of the articles, quite a large proportion in the scientific journals, are pure nonsense.
Indeed. I worry quite a lot about what people are doing to the earth, what corporations are doing to the earth with the chemicals that they are using that are toxic. The fertilizers and the chemicals that we're pouring into the ground to supposedly make better food, and the genetically modified seeds, that really bothers me.
It's sort of a product of the Industrial Revolution, and the view that everything can be looked at as an industrial process. But you can't do that with living things. And the earth could be viewed as a living thing, a living organism almost. And we rely on it, and it relies on us to behave ourselves, I think. We just haven't learnt that lesson. One of the things that I think is most important about the electric universe model is that it gives us a better picture of our place within the scheme of things. And once you have that understanding, you no longer see yourself as separate from the things around you, from the earth. You know, we talk about people going into space and living, setting up colonies on the moon and on Mars and so on, but nobody thinks about the fact that we are actually a part of the Earth. So if we move to another planet, will we still be humans? Nobody's asked that question.
Indeed.
These are the sorts of things that the electric universe, it asks questions that at present are not even on the radar of current science.
Right. And there are other cultures, for instance, the Native American culture, who were very tied to the earth. They were very tied to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
They respected the earth. They worked within it. They understood it to be a living thing. And
yes.
And we've gotten so far beyond that.
Yes.
Such disrespect for the environment.
Yeah, I think this once again comes down to education and our history. Because we tend to ask children to specialize, they either go into the arts or the sciences fairly early on. And once they go to university, it gets even more specialized to the point where sometimes you can't even talk sensibly to the person next to you because you're in a different specialty than them. This is the wrong way to educate people. If they're going to have a broad picture of our place in the universe and of how things work, you cannot exclude other subjects. You need a broad education. But I don't think there's any university in the world that does that, because anyone who tries to get up and teach a broad picture tends to get shot down by the specialists who say, you can't teach that because I'm the expert. That's my area. This kind of thing. We have to break down those barriers, and the electric universe does that. It's a part of the process. You have to understand that everything is connected, and you can't talk about one little area and consider that you've only got problems in that area, because if you were to talk to the people down the road who have even developed their own special language to keep them separate, if you could actually get together and talk the same language, you would realize that you have common problems and that there is a common solution. And this is what the electric universe tries to do. It doesn't try and use specialized language. It tries to make things understandable to everyone. And this is borne out by the fact that people come up to me at the conference and say, this is the best conference I've been to because it's so broad. It covers all sorts of things. It doesn't matter what you're interested in, there is something there for you. And it changes people's lives. They see themselves as being able to contribute. And we had more new contributors at this last meeting than we've had at any time in the past. And this is something that I think is going to continue and expand in future.
I had a friend that attended. I haven't talked with him much since he came back because he's been sick. But yeah, I think it sounded very, very wonderful.
As people have said, it's unlike any conference they've been to. One of our masters of ceremonies is a classic scholar, and so we have the pleasure of hearing a classic scholar talking about the science that's just been talked about. And it could have been anything. It could have been biology, it could have been astronomy, it could have been geology. And he'll tie that together with the ancient philosophers and weave it into the next speaker who's talking about a completely different subject. So it's quite an amazing experience, I think. I've never been to conferences like it, and I'm very pleased that this is the way things are going, because, as I said, I think that we have to stop pulling things to pieces to try and find out how they work. I once said it's like flying a 747 into the side of a mountain and then picking over the pieces to figure out how it works. We have to look at things from a more holistic point of view, and that's one of the reasons why the name of my website is Holoscience. It's a holistic science.
Yes, indeed. Now, what is NASA's place in this? Do they have one?
There are people in NASA who follow what we're doing. And one of the reasons that some of those scientists are doing that is that when you have all of your predictions fail and one of ours works, seems to work in a given situation, then those, I think, who are really looking for the truth are prepared to keep an eye on us. Now, the problem, of course, in science at present is that subjects are taboo, and the electric universe is taboo in many areas. And anyone who espouses an interest is likely to run into strife, either with their job or their colleagues ostracizing them. Unfortunately, this goes on. You're just dismissed without a second thought, because that's not real science or something, whatever they define as being science.
So if it's not approved, then you risk losing your job or something like that. I mean, people used to think that the Earth was flat, and people were
Yep.
hung and burned at the
Oh.
stake and all kinds of things.
Yes. Well, at least they draw the line at that these days. But
Good.
it's a strange thing. It's almost as if the universe knows in some sense, and you could. This is something that Rupert Sheldrake would probably approve of. When something is learnt, that information is available to other living beings, particularly ones of the same species, and even more especially amongst those who know each other, for instance. The electric universe paradigm seems to be gaining more and more scholars. Because I think the idea is out there. It's more easily assimilated once you have a certain critical number of people who all understand the model. And those who, as I said, are interested in the truth will keep an eye on us. And at some point, they, if they have the courage, or when they have the courage, may decide that the future lies with us and not with the current paradigm. At that time, I think we will see a revolution unlike any in history, because this changes everything about what we know about ourselves, about the planet Earth and its history, and our place in the universe.
I think, getting back to the religious issues, I think that religion gives people the hope that there's something after their death.
Yes.
And with the electric universe, I mean, I really don't want to I don't want to leave.
Okay, well, I subscribe to the work of Rupert Sheldrake and others in this area who have been working in areas which are frowned upon by most scientists. And that is after-death research. I remember meeting Dr. Gary Schwartz at one of our meetings early in the 2000s, and that was very interesting. He's doing after-death research, but Rupert Sheldrake's work, more particularly, is stuff that can be tested easily, and he's devised simple experiments that involves the public. And he has shown that there is communication between you and the universe at large, and that happens because he says consciousness is not contained within that grey porridge in your head, that brain. It actually extends beyond. It's almost as if your brain is a kind of transducer which connects you with the universe, and your consciousness is not embodied in you, nor is your
Ah,
memory.
okay.
So, and another fellow, another biologist, a cellular biologist, Bruce Lipton, has pointed out that the receptors on the outside of every cell in your body has certain receptors for chemical signals in the blood and so on. But there are others which don't appear to talk to things within your body, but talk to things without, if you like. This gives the impression that we are representations of some intelligence, some consciousness beyond us. And the electric universe actually provides a simple model to pursue, to examine this idea. And that is that we look out into space and we see patterns repeated on grander and grander scales. And if you get to the atomic, if you look in the other direction, down into the atomic and the subatomic, the electric universe just proposes that you repeat that pattern of the atom within each subatomic particle and so on, down to whatever level. We don't know. We don't really understand what matter is, for that matter. If you can pardon that. So it gives you, and also this matter exists in resonant states. It's like there's this symphony being played all at once that is you, and you connect with this signal which is out there. Bruce Lipton says it's like having a television receiver. The television receiver goes on the blink, but if you fix it, the TV station is still transmitting. And
Ah.
this could help explain why identical twins often seem as though they're tuned into the same TV station. They do the same things remarkably, even if they're separated from birth. So there is these receptors, if you like, these TV antennas on every cell in your body, which is tuned into the universe at large. And this gives you a completely different picture of life and death.
Oh,
it
certainly
suggests
does.
that the physical existence is a transitory one, but it's just a part of a journey of learning. So we're here to learn. The universe learns about itself through us. We are the self-referential part of the universe. And this gives you a whole meaning to life, a purpose, and it means that your life is not without meaning. And that your death is just an episode in a story of unknown duration.
Right. And of course, I think, too, I would like to know, okay, who put all this together? Is there...
Well, these are the big questions that neither modern science nor any other science that we have at present can answer, because we hardly know how to frame the question properly. If we don't understand the basic things like what matter is and how it's created, we have no idea how to create matter, let alone a universe. We don't know what the electric force is. What is it that generates the electric force, and what exactly is it? We don't know. But we can describe it. We can measure it and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point of view, science can progress. But the big questions are still way out there in front of us. We are quite ignorant in all the basic things.
Now, regarding the energy,
yes.
you know about HAARP, of course.
Yes.
What function does that have in our society? What is that for? And how is that just somebody, the government through one of their agencies put this together to do what? It seems very harmful to the atmosphere.
Well, it's quite possible that it is harmful, but scientists have never been held back by those sort of considerations, it seems. I remember being worried as a young child. I was at primary school. When it was said that they were going to test hydrogen bombs in the ocean, I thought, my God.
What a terrible thing
yeah,
that is.
Hydrogen bombs in an ocean of hydrogen, the whole world will blow up. And there were a lot of other people who felt the same at the time. But notwithstanding that, the scientists went ahead. I mean, we tend to, technology can progress. And this is all it is, of course, technology. Once you've got the idea, the technologist can take it and run with it. But the technologists are often working from a basis of profound ignorance of the of what matter is and what effects they will have when they do certain things. And I think the same goes for HAARP. Simply because we could concentrate a beam of electromagnetic energy into the ionosphere and play with the ionosphere, so to speak, it was deemed a good idea. And we'll see what happens. Without any thought of the consequences,
right.
Because, of course, science is compartmentalized. So the guys who build the HAARP are not the guys who are concerned with the electrical structure of water and what that means biologically. And this is why I say science is a real mess at present, because it's so disjointed and disconnected. The electric universe, on the other hand, presents one big single picture. And if there's a bit that doesn't fit, then you've got to go back and adjust your model, the entire thing. You can't just accept anomalies.
Right. And we're not the only beings that inhabit the planet. And all of this is hurting animal life, which is a lot more sensitive to things like butterflies and that kind of thing. There's, like bees. For instance, with colony collapse, and what is causing that? So,
well, I think bees are a good example of where the idea of breaking things down into its components fails, because bees operate as a almost like an intelligent entity. A beehive seems to have a mind of its own, so to speak. So this is one area where the isolating the parts doesn't tell you anything about the whole.
Right. And I think we need all of these things that are in our environment. The bees, we need them
Oh,
to
sure.
pollinate things. Because all of this is all integrated. Like, for instance, we cannot get rid of all of the bees and expect to enjoy life, to experience life, the way that we should be if we get rid of certain elements in our environment.
Yes. Well, our food industry, unfortunately, is run on the
Profit model.
mechanical model of life, and it's creating all sorts of unintended consequences simply because the underlying science is disjointed, disconnected from reality.
Right. And of course, these people are out to make money.
Well, that's the other problem, of course, and that is human nature. And unfortunately, the people who generally rise to the top in politics and corporations are could be classed as undiagnosed
Indeed, I
sociopaths.
usually refer to them as sociopathic or
Well,
psychopathic.
yeah, well, it is a problem, and it should be addressed because they create havoc because they're only focused on themselves. They have no concept of what they do in relation to everyone else. And this is a problem, but nothing's done about it because it's just considered that, if you leave them to their own devices, the good ones will be rise to the top and the bad ones will sink to the bottom. Well, that's not the way it works, as we
Right.
keep finding out.
Right. And even the U.S. Navy is doing some things in the seas that are destroying a lot of the animal life in the sea. And I feel terrible about that.
Well, this is one aspect of human nature that I think when we understand our real past will make a big difference, and that is our warlike behavior, because it's quite irrational. And as Velikovsky himself pointed out, and he was a psychoanalyst, the human race behaves like a traumatized individual who has suppressed the memory of doomsday. But the problem is that somebody who does that in an individual tends to repeat the disaster by trying to visit on other people. It's like they get a catharsis from witnessing destruction. And of course, the human race shows that in spades, even our films and so on. I'm really appalled at the films that young kids watch these days. But it is a form of catharsis where an unremembered event, and we seem to have a racial memory of these things, by the way. An unremembered event where we were practically wiped from the face of the earth keeps showing up in a fashion where we experience it vicariously through a film or even, really through war. And when it's all over, we'll rejoice at the fact, that the earth's okay, we're okay. We don't realize that we're just repeating a psychiatric disorder, so to speak. But you can heal a person by letting them understand slowly what it is they're doing. And the human race needs that understanding desperately.
Right. There was a movie that I watched last year. In fact, I had the producer on the program, a Mr. Gamble, and the name of the movie is Thrive. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
It was just a really remarkable movie where he talked about some of these things. And there's also a gentleman that made a movie in England. It's called what is the name of that movie? It's about frequency. It's about he mainly dealt with cell phones and that kind of thing, resonance. And I had him on my program. And so there are efforts, I think, for when people bring forth these kinds of ideas and present them in a video so that it gets a wide audience that is kind of bringing certain people forward so that they can accept the electric universe, so that they're open to thinking about other things.
Yes, that's really it. We're trying to rekindle curiosity and excitement at discovery because that's what keeps me going. The excitement of seeing vistas that others haven't seen. And I've been able, through those, seeing those vistas, to make predictions which at the time were quite outrageous, but which have almost without exception, with the space probes and so on, been shown to be correct.
Okay. Yeah, that gentleman was James Russell, and he says that we are beings of frequency, and that was it was just a really remarkable video.
Yeah.
And
Well, that's one of the things. The basic story from the Electric Universe is that we, all of the trillions of chemical activities that go on in your body every second, can't be governed by the usual radio signals and that kind of thing. It has to be an intimate connection at the matter level, and it's based on resonances between biological molecules. Unfortunately, a lot of the language that's used, so-called New Age language, is based on terms that physicists introduced last century and which have no more meaning than the New Age meaning. In fact, you could say that the first New Agers were Einstein and the mathematicians who came along and followed him. They used terms which are meaningless. And this is a pity. What the Electric Universe tries to do is actually give meaning to these terms. Now, to talk about frequency doesn't really convey very much, but when you talk about resonances, people understand resonance.
Okay.
And that's what we're talking about.
All righty. Yeah, that's the name of his movie, Resonance, Beings of
Well,
Frequency.
very good. Okay.
Now, how does Tesla play into what the Electric Universe? I mean, he was somebody that the government really they took all of his research and hid it all.
Yeah. Well, Tesla, to my mind, was one of these intuitive geniuses who seemed to be able to visualize how electric circuits worked. I think he could just draw them and then build them, and they would work. But there are so many apocryphal stories about Tesla that it's very hard to sort, the wheat from the chaff. Certainly, his work has not been of any use to me in formulating the electric universe. That's not to say that his work won't be seen as more valuable in the future. It's just that it hasn't been necessary. But I get a feeling and an idea by reading the stories about what he did, that he understood much more than anyone of his time. And part of it is this idea of the electric force operating like an elastic band between all matter. I think he understood that. But the electric universe is actually based on the work of a number of outstanding scientists, stretching back. The most notable one is Christian Birkeland, the Norwegian chap who ventured to build a magnetic laboratory up in the Arctic Circle and determined that the auroras were an electrical phenomenon based on an electrical connection between the Earth and the Sun. Now, that has taken until just the last decade for that to be confirmed by NASA. And here's a guy back at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, who had already figured that out and also built an experiment to show that he could reproduce the aurora in the laboratory in a simple electrical experiment, which, by the way, we are about to do again, but with modern instrumentation and so on, and in a slightly different way to show that the sun is an electrical phenomenon and not a thermonuclear object. This will change everything we think we know about stars and our own sun.
Really?
It also has things to say about climate change, of course.
Right. I was just going to ask you about climate change. I know that men are trying to do this. There's all kinds of well, they've been fiddling with this since at least the 1960s, during the Vietnam War, when they were creating rain in certain places. But isn't that cyclical? There have been ice ages and then warmer periods of time. Isn't that just the natural system, the natural way of things?
Yes, we have to get used to the fact that climate changes. What we do on Earth concerning the climate probably has very little effect, but I must say it is a good idea to try and clean up our act. The air pollution in some cities is absolutely dreadful, but we have virtually no effect on the climate. The sun is the driver of our climate.
Right.
We're at its mercy. And one of the things which is not taken into any consideration in any climate model is the electrical power input into our weather systems.
Okay.
So that all the strange weather that we're having and powerful storms don't look to anything that we do to cause that. It's the sun itself, and it's the fact that its electrical behavior has changed recently. It has had one of the lowest sunspot counts in modern times. That shows that the electrical input to the sun has changed. And this must have an effect on our climate.
Okay.
So there are some Piers Corbyn in England, for instance, who looks at the sun to make his predictions, and he's remarkably accurate, has said that we appear to be heading towards a cooling period. But a cooling period doesn't mean that you're not going to have powerful storms. The powerful storms are driven largely electrically, not by heat input to the earth.
Now, can man, certain scientists, can they use the energy, say, from an earthquake, and direct that energy to a different place?
Yes, well, that's another thing. Earthquakes are not understood either. In the traditional terms, the problem has been to try and explain how much or how you can get so much energy just from shifting rocks. And the answer is you can't. The energy is actually in the form of an underground lightning bolt, if you like. So an earthquake is, if you like, the crash of thunder coming from within the earth.
Oh.
It is an electrical discharge phenomenon, and there's plenty of evidence piling up in that regard now. People have noticed that electric charge builds up in the ionosphere above a region that's about to suffer a large earthquake. And there are various means of determining this build-up and trying to predict more accurately when an earthquake will occur and in what region. Pinpointing it may be a little more difficult, but at least there is some progress in this regard.
Now, how does fracking, something that they are doing a lot of in certain states, how does fracking, what effect does it have on the earth? I think it's extremely dangerous to put all these chemicals to fracture the
Yes.
earth and throw all this water and chemicals down there.
This is another case of technology going blindly ahead. And suffering the consequences later, unintended consequences. The point is that our energy needs can be met much more simply when you begin to understand the electric universe and low energy nuclear reactions, because they are possible. In other words, cold fusion.
All right, yes.
So once we stop trying to do things by what I term brute force and ignorance means, that is smashing atoms together to try and get energy out of the nucleus, but doing it in a very measured way. In the same way you do chemical reactions, you use a catalyst and you use the exquisite resonances within the nuclei of certain heavy elements, then you can actually get energy from nuclear energy at low temperatures. In other words, cold fusion. This, I feel, is the way of the future for our energy sources. And we can stop burning coal and stop trying to crack rocks to get, oil from the rocks too.
Right. Now,
It
wasn't there a group of scientists who really stopped all of the progress on learning about coal fusion? I know that there were a couple of people in France that a couple of scientists that were working on it, and then there were some physicists at I believe BYU, Stephen Jones. Didn't he have something to do with stopping the
I don't know who it was. I didn't memorize the players. I know Pons and Fleischmann were the two
Right.
who received all of the wrath of the establishment because this was impossible, according
Yes.
to their way of thinking. But this is the problem, of course. Science is supposed to be a rational process, but unfortunately, it's driven by very firm beliefs and dogma. And it stops a lot of worthwhile research in its tracks. At the conference, Rupert Sheldrake said that he felt that the best way to get some progress in this area is to offer a $1 million prize for somebody who could show what they call above unity power generation by whatever means. And that would, of course, attract a lot of people who've already said that they have such machines. And you could give the prize to the one that produced the most power, above unity power, as they call it. And of course, he said one way to achieve a high profile for this activity is to involve the betting shops so that people could bet on the
Oh,
outcomes. And he
sure.
said he personally would put $1,000 on the probability that cold fusion is possible or above unity energy is possible. And he said he'd be very interested to see what these so-called experts who deny that this can happen, what money they'd be prepared to put on such a scheme against
Right.
such a an outcome.
Now
I think
the
that's an excellent idea.
Yeah. Now, the people who stopped the Pons and Fleischmann, were they motivated by the corporations who are making money off of the current use of oil and coal and that kind of thing? Isn't that where all their money is?
I'm not sure what the how you could measure such a thing, but I think the most powerful driver is dogma. This is impossible. It's like a perpetual motion machine or something like that, which is impossible. But this views the operation of this above unity power supply as being an isolated unit. It's got nothing to do with anything outside it, but we're talking about here an interconnected universe. And who knows? The field's wide open when you allow for other possibilities. It's the dogmatic approach that stops us in our tracks all the time. And as several speakers pointed out, there has been very little fundamental progress in science in the last 100 years.
Oh my goodness.
And the reason for that, I mean, technology goes ahead, as I said, without any regard. Once you've found something that works, they can make it work even better so that we've got amazing technology. But our fundamental science is still stuck where it was back at the beginning of the 20th century. And I think the reason for it is that we have been blindly going down a dead end,
Right.
and getting more and more silly as we go. I mean, you read the headlines about what's been discovered out there in the deep space, and it just gets sillier. The latest one is, of course, that they've discovered a group of quasars which stretch across the sky and are so distant that they must be the biggest cluster of objects in the universe. But it means, for the Big Bang theory, there are huge problems. It more or less discounts the Big Bang theory.
Well, that's good.
But of course, that's not an option because that's dogma. That's the fairy tale we've been taught since we were children.
Which is
And
totally
they're not.
ridiculous. I mean, it's
It
just.
is. It's ridiculous. Starts with a miracle, and it just has miracles to order wherever necessary to keep the story going. It's very much a fiction story. And I mean, the latest thing is adding dark matter and dark energy where needed to explain things in terms of the Big Bang. They're only necessary because the Big Bang demands them. If you back off that and say the Big Bang never happened, all of this falls into place and becomes quite sensible.
Right. Are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Jerry Tennant? He wrote a book. It's called Healing is Voltage.
No,
And
I haven't read that book.
I just got it recently, probably 6 months ago. He might be a very good person to have speak at one of your conferences because he talks about the electricity in your body and how you how to get rid of chronic pain, which he says is simply a symptom of low voltage.
Yes, I think I know what he's referring to. And this is where Jerry Pollack's work is very important because it shows that water can act like a battery. It's actually a source of electrical energy in your body. And that's just plain old water. It's an amazing substance. When it structures in living systems and forms a gel, and of course our cells are more or less gels inside, that's not just liquid water, then they transfer information between the biological molecules over great distances, and they also generate an electrical potential, which is the sort of thing you need to drive the activity of the cells. And all this happens just with normal body heat, infrared radiation. So the voltages are important, and the means of maintaining healthy voltages within your body suggests that various ways of earthing or having water which is not acid, for instance, with acid, sorry, more alkaline water, all of these kinds of things may be beneficial. And it could mean that water supplies, public water supplies, could be modified a little just to try and provide more healthy water than we currently get through our public water supplies.
Right, like taking out the fluoride and that kind of thing.
Well, taking out the fluoride would be a good start. That's another one of these expert opinions, which is based on just a purely chemical approach to life.
Right. Well, this has been very, very interesting. And with regard to water, I mean, when you get dehydrated, I mean, you could die
Oh,
very
yes.
quickly. And I know
Yeah.
when you're ill or something, you need to replace your electrolytes. It's
I like
very.
Jerry Pollack's statement that we are structured water. Life is structured water. That's a pretty
Right, we
profound
are.
statement.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are we, 75% water?
Something like that, yes. But it's a water that's not like the water that comes out of the tap. That's the interesting thing.
Right. Well, this is just fascinating. I think I need to come to one of your conferences.
Yes, I think you do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so very much for joining me. It's been remarkable. I need to really delve into this, and I hope that the listeners will also do that. Your book is you can find it on Amazon.
Yep.
Let's see. I had Amazon up here just a bit ago, but I suggest that people start with the guide.
Yes, if you go to the thunderbolts.info website, that's got the most public interface, if you like. My website, holoscience.com, is the more a bit more technical, but hopefully it's easy reading. It's just that it deals with the science issues in a bit more depth.
Right. But this essential guide, I mean, there's several chapters here,
Yes.
and I think that would be a good starting place for all of us.
That is a good starting place, and our books are available through the thunderbolts.info website as well, if you don't want to go through Amazon.
Exactly. Okay, that's under products right up at the top. Just and it also comes in ebooks, so I think ebooks are really wonderful.
Yes, there are a couple of e-books there which are aimed at young students, really. It's that level. Big pictures. The text is sparse, just enough to give a picture of how this an electric sun looks instead of a thermonuclear one, for instance, or how comets really work, that kind of thing.
Okay, maybe we need to start there. Oh, well, this is very exciting. I'm so glad that who I call Uncle Rick, I'm so glad that he pointed me in your direction. It's just
Yes, thank you, Uncle Rick.
bless his heart. Well, thank you so much, and I hope that we can do this again, and I hope to meet you at some point.
Yes, thank you, Diana, and I hope to see you at the next conference, which will probably be next January, probably back in Albuquerque.
Okay. Sounds wonderful. Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.